Do the stuff you do best, which is organizing volunteers and empowering creative people to do really fun stuff. I mean, that's what radio stations are really good at. So you just need to empower them to do it visually as well as in an audio space.
On this edition of Radio Survivor, Jeffrey Simmons of Audio in the Trees submits to cross-examination by Paul Riesmendahl about how to use Instagram to promote a community radio station.
Mostly I'm trying to get people to click that bio link.
And how do you do that?
I'm in their feed with a photo or a video, giving them a message of whatever is happening at the station right now. For example,
so how do you? And that's
right now we're
I
trying to get people on our email list.
Okay,
that's our focus. Right.
And so how do you do that on Instagram?
Matthew Lazar tells me about one of his favorite online listening experiences that keeps failing in the marketplace.
It was a really big deal. I mean, it was this thing that, you know, skyrocketed, you know, straight up the stratosphere and then just crashed so quickly.
And Jennifer Waits and Paul report back from CMJ's first college day on tour.
We really needed to stay relevant for ourselves, to our administration, and also to our community.
Hi, I'm Paul Riesmendahl. I am one half of the Radio Survivor team.
My name is Eric Klein, and I'm that other half.
And I'm really excited for today's interview. We'll be talking about social media with Jeffrey Simmons, who is building a social media business to help consult with community media, community organizations, as well as businesses. But he has a deep, deep, deep community radio background. And that's why I wanted to have him talk with us about it. Because, you know, I mean, we do social media. You and I both do it. Radio Survivor does. I know many people who do it. And I know stations who do it. But I often hear from people from a variety of backgrounds and also a variety of age groups even question social media. They feel like they have to do it, but they're not always sure why they have to do it. And because they're not sure what it gets them. And because often it seems like, okay, I'm just doing this thing. I'm putting out these messages into the internet, into the ether. What does it all add up to? And I really hope that Jeff will be able to kind of expand on this and give us not necessarily the how to, because I don't think that's the most interesting question.
The why,
the ethos. What is the spirit
in
some ways?
To support your radio station and to support your community, you're going to be on the social networking platforms that other people are on.
Right. In the same way how I feel about community radio and about podcasting, the how certainly is important. But at some level, that's not the expertise one develops. What one develops really is the why,
right,
and what you do with it.
The problem with how is the next question is, well, how much do you want to spend?
Yeah, I know.
And
right.
That changes for each person, and then it gets complicated from there. The why is the same if you have $10 million or if you have zero.
Right. And exactly. And the why may be different because of who you are and what you're focused on and what you're interested in and who you want to be working with. But yes, you're right. The why in that case has no budget and there is no barrier to entry. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, I'm glad that we had Jeffrey Simmons in the studio.
Well, welcome, Jeff Simmons.
Wait, I'm not ready.
You're not ready.
We're ready
now. You are you are a Portland community radio fixture. Let's say that.
Okay.
Because I mean you founded something called Radio 23, which was a really cool experiment in kind of community internet broadcasting, but making community kind of both local and global, but using the same community radio model, because you had DJs doing their own show from all over the place. And then in terrestrial terms, you helped to co-found X-Ray Radio here, a community radio station. And then recently, as you transitioned out of X-Ray, you've helped to co-found Freeform Portland, a new low-power FM station.
True stories.
And we have you here because we really want to pick your brain about social media, which is something that you're doing now and have been doing actually for quite some time, but you're really focusing on it with your project Audio in the Trees. So, Jeff, tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, I love social media. I love the networking and the connectivity out there. And it's just fun for me. And I think the easiest way to sort of use it as a springboard for this conversation is Radio 23. It was a station built completely on social media.
Okay.
And I had to have a marketing student at PSU tell me that maybe 3 or 4 years into the project. And I was like, oh yeah, you're right. I didn't think of it that way. I just thought of it as like these tools that I had to get a hold of people that would be interested in broadcasting and people that are interested in listening to radio and create this sort of remote station that jumps around and everyone shares the same server. And I realized really quickly that I sourced all the DJs, I sourced all the audience and promoted the whole thing all over social media. And oh yeah, I guess I did do that.
What year was that?
Started in 2008, really. Okay. Sort of like the birth was 2007, but it really didn't launch until 2008 or 2009. And, you know, wasn't really a too original of an idea is the reality. There's a lot of other individuals and institutions and communities that were applying the same thing. You see the same sort of stuff happening at Soma FM. My friend Barry was doing a similar thing called Error FM at the same time. And it sort of exemplified what I love about social media, which is that community of interaction and people talking, and you sort of put them all in a forum and let them, a forum, if I didn't enunciate that well enough.
And so the Radio 23 was, people were doing their own shows and adding them to the internet stream, right? But these were like people, these are hosted shows, correct?
You got it, live shows. They're live shows from a podcast studio such as we're sitting in right now, same sort of thing. And I would just remotely with Skype and eventually the Google video chatting, Google Hangouts, would just train people how to set their computers up to broadcast. Because it's right there. You can figure it out how to use the software. You don't have to be an engineer. And that was sort of the, for me at least, the point of the project is I could teach anybody how to do it. It didn't really matter if they were afraid of their computer or not. Jinx in Toronto was like my favorite example of this like 60-plus-year-old dude that could barely work his computer, but I could log in remotely, set him all up, and he can definitely run a great show every Friday night as soon as he knows how to do it and the steps to follow. So that was what was fun about it, is teaching people.
And that ran for about how many years, Radio 23?
Oh, gosh. I never really counted. We just officially shut the project down this year. So I guess, you know, 8 years or so, something like that.
And in that time is when you really got sort of used to or really started to get your legs in social media.
It's sort of an act of doing, of promoting. I mean, I think I figured out through that process for myself that radio, in essence, that's all it is promoting something. It's just fill in the blank of what you want to promote, whether it's, you know, an idea or a community or good music or anything. So I really got comfortable with that and the idea that you were promoting something anyway. And so I think there's a lot of shame involved with people talking about what they love and geeking out about it. If anyone else is going to like this too. And I wasn't worried about that, because it was mostly what I was able to do is create a network and then turn all those broadcasters loose within that network and give them the controls of it. Let them post to everyone. I was just all about letting everyone gets a shot at it. So it wasn't just me creating a brand voice or anything as much as it was just giving a community access to the password to the Facebook and Twitter.
And so at the height, about how many people did you have participating? Do you know?
Gosh, at the height, I remember a full Google Calendar at one point, insanely enough, that was like, it would have been like 36 broadcasters or so, like in that range. I feel like we definitely broke 50, and it was like, it set around 60 to 75 for a minute, like back in 2000 and something.
So we're talking about Radio 23, which was a internet radio station that used Twitter mostly to get the word out.
A lot of Twitter, a lot of MySpace. We actually started in the beginning of MySpace. And one of the things I originally did, not ashamed at all of, like, following the people that followed WFMU on MySpace found me a lot of my DJs. And honestly, there's like 4 of them on FMU now after Radio 23 is over, which I think it's great. 4 might be an exaggeration. I think there's 3 live now that used to be Radio 23 DJs, and then another one that maybe used to have a show. But I love that it was like based on that weirdness and that freedom.
I want to know what's missing now from the social media landscape now that MySpace isn't much of a space. Was there something about MySpace that you would like back because you used it, or is it okay that it's gone?
Oh, it's fine. It's just I don't know if I can even get into the territory of of predictions of anything social media wise, but like it's just another channel, another platform, and they're all going to come and go.
So
eventually.
What was good about MySpace then was that people were there.
Yeah, what was good about it is everyone was on it.
So wherever the people are is the good spot.
Bingo. And, you know, that moves. That's what we're finding out.
So you're able to find DJs to do shows. And then I presume you're also finding listeners or helping to bring people to your station.
Exactly.
So I think that this is something where, I mean, so I think a lot of people who are in community radio or in podcasting, they get that social media is important because it's this promotional angle, right? And I think sometimes that's also why they don't do as much of it, because it feels like it's a promotional angle. And that's hard work on the one hand. And two, it's not really what they feel like they want to be doing. They feel like it's almost a necessary evil rather than maybe a fun part of what they do.
Right.
And you enjoy it. And so how did you come to enjoying the social media aspect rather than it just being this kind of chore or task that you just had to do to make the thing go?
Well, I just love promoting things that are great, and getting behind just amplifying people that are doing great stuff. So for me, it's just mostly a matter of doing. But I think, again, it's just empowering a community of broadcasters like that. You have so many opportunities, and so many voices and so much volunteer hours already at the table, that it's just figuring out a way to engage everyone's personal audiences, especially when you put it in the context of a community station. That's the easiest way for you to reach the actual community that's around the.
So you're talking personal audience, the audience of individual DJs.
You got it.
And I mean, a lot of times I think maybe the DJs don't even know their own audience in a certain way. Do you see that happening?
I think so. And there's definitely the question of whether or not the DJ has an audience already, or they're building an audience. But eventually their friends and their network on their Facebook or their Twitter or their Instagram, that's that audience. And by having something for them to post, and for them to share it just only amplifies the station's presence in the community. And if we're talking specifically about radio stations, but you could be talking about, promoting your individual shows. And, I think in the projects that I've been involved with, especially with Radio 23 and X-Ray, but I think you find it in general, the type of people that are willing to come in week after week and promote a show, or more importantly, to do the show, are also willing to promote it for the same reasons, to put their mark on it, to put their graphic on it, to tell the story that they're trying to tell. So, a lot of times it's just having something in place to reshare that material. A lot of times that's pretty easy to train volunteers to do that.
So let's talk, maybe talk a little brass tacks then, because I think that that's the question that a lot of people have in terms of using whether it's Twitter or using Facebook or using Instagram is, okay, so what, I mean, I think there's a real question of like, well, so what do I do? Do I just say, hey, I'm going to be on the air today at 2? Do I just say, hey, listen to my show, it's really cool? You know, is that enough? Is that what I'm supposed to be doing? Because I think a lot of people, there is that element where sometimes I think we think of it like a billboard, or we think of it like a flyer. So we're just sort of saying, hey, broadcasting out, this is what I'm doing. But it seems to me that that's probably not quite accurate or adequate. So give us a sense for like when you're trying to work with a DJ or with a station what is your advice about using, let's say use Twitter first as an example.
Well, I think number one is, the station's website. You can't post that too many times. No matter what channel you're on or what you're promoting or what you're doing, like that's the whole point of it. So if you've got an entire network of however many DJs you have at your station or producers or, you know, all sorts of places that your content might come from, if you got them once a week to post your website address
On their own personal
networks.
So they should have that, first of all.
Well, I mean, that's what we're talking about. If you're promoting your show week after week, yes, it can get repetitive and boring and your audience doesn't want to listen to it. And, you know, I worry myself and use my own show as a testing ground for, I had to stop posting it on my personal pages because it just becomes annoying if the only thing I'm posting every week is a promotional commercial for my radio show.
So you're a DJ or even a station, you're using, you know, your social media accounts, be it Facebook or Twitter, to promote what you're doing, right? Then how do you keep it from just being perceived as this like one way, oh, you're just telling me what you're doing, whatever. Because that seems to be not quite the proper use of these platforms.
Totally. And you can immediately get rid of sort of that stigma of saying, if you're allowing your DJs and you're repeating the stuff that they're saying and sharing that, I think that's the best way to show, like, this is the community that you're listening to. These are the people involved. Like, you know, we're sharing their posts, retweets and shares are great. But that, yeah, you can't make up an entire feed worth of posts all based on promoting your show. You got to be promoting and representing the culture of the station, of what's happening, the people that are involved specifically. And, you know, it's I think every brand or every station has got, you know, probably three things they could hone in on that like really represent what they're all about. And if you're not, you have to continually be finding those ways to share that and to echo that, that whatever that feeling is that happens in the community.
So you said three things that they're about. Give me a sense for what that is, or maybe even if there's a station you think does this well and you could highlight.
Well, I would hate to use an example like that. I think more importantly that it's about finding like a balanced feed. It can't all be promotional. And it's going to be different from station to station about what their audience wants.
So let's say a station that's principally kind of freeform music.
Promoting the DJs is one of those things you're going to be doing all the time, like we were already saying.
When you say promoting the DJs, you mean these are people that also leave the building and go spin records somewhere else, and so you're telling them that that's where they're going to be. What does promoting the DJ mean?
I mean, in general, just including, you know, the programmers that you have as part of that, as part of that message that's going out, is this is the community this is the community, like literally, this is what we do, and
this is their name and this is what they love.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think we keep circling around that specifically and we can go on to others too, but it's, I don't know. It's very important to me, I think, because what I found in doing all of these stations that, most of the time it is the programmers and the DJs that make up the majority of the community and that are the core listening audience, the core community. And I think maybe there's a little bit of shame in smaller communities, or smaller stations on like who's really listening to the station anymore. And I think that has to be, I mean, especially in 2015, that has to be done away with. The value of the station, even if it is all of the broadcasters in the building or all of the volunteers that number 100 people that listen to this station religiously every week. And if they don't, why not? That's really important. And beyond that, is gravy to me. I mean, obviously I haven't been involved with the type of stations that need to have huge budgets and make enormous amounts of income to stay afloat. So I'm sort of special that way, but,
So what you're saying is that in a way, right? So you take that core and that core is super important. It's your community. It's your stakeholders, if you want to say in a certain way. And you need to radiate almost, right? So yes. Each of these people who works on this project should be kind of proud of it, and not just proud of what they do themselves, right? So if I do the 12 to 3 show, I'm also really proud about the show that's on at 3 to 6.
You got it. And we all know stations are full of people that are only going to focus on their show,
right?
Don't care about the community, but they're also full of people that will gladly run a Facebook page for you.
And you can send an example.
Exactly.
And so you said that you got to figure out what your station is about, right? So you're sharing the DJs, right? So you're making sure people know about their shows at the very least, or sharing things about them. What are other ways in which, let's say specifically like a station Twitter account, make sure it's engaging in a way that helps to, I hope, attract audience at the very, you know, but if not that, then at least really kind of forges relationships with the audience the station has.
Right. And Twitter is a bit of an anomaly for a lot of people. But for people that do get it, it's at the core of creating like-minded communities. It's all about conversation. The essence of Twitter is a conversation. And it's, the great part about Twitter is you can reach out, and it's definitely an equalizer as far as finding all of the like-minded people in a given community. So I'd say for a second spoke, you're really talking about finding all of the people that are on your team in this, in your region, or, you know, or globally.
And how do you do that? I mean, what's sort of the, I mean, is it a build it and they will come, or does it need to be more active?
What station do you look to as, mm-hmm. as your model? If we can only be like fill in the blank, mm-hmm. everyone thought of a station there. If we could only be like that, share their posts.
So follow them,
share their posts,
interact with them. Got it.
And that's going to follow on any channel, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or Twitter. It's like, once you start interacting and following stations and broadcasters and accounts that you look up to, it's going to do itself. You're going to find your own style. You're going to start interacting with people that are speaking your same language. And those are the same people that are repeated when you're having a pledge drive, you know, those are the same people that if you're sharing a lot of their posts, when you need something, they're going to be there for you as well. That's again, the way Twitter works and the sort of at the essence of it, of retweeting and sharing, which is, you know, pretty much every great thing from the feed to retweeting to everything that ever was great about Twitter is something that Facebook stole. So that's why it just always continually gets better and better. You want to really make it super simple and just contain media and copy? Great. We'll call that Instagram. It's all exactly the same thing.
That advice that you just gave about how to use Twitter was the exact same advice that Zahra Nourbash, the podcaster of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, gave, where her podcast was launched off of her Twitter account. And yep. Her Twitter account began by her following people she admired and then interacting with them there on Twitter, and it worked.
Totally. And you'll find that audience out there because there's social media managers for every one of the stations that you love, or any podcast or anything else. And they're out there on a daily basis. Somebody's manning those accounts and somebody's looking for that exact same interaction so they can continue to talk about topics that are important to them. And it applies for anything, whatever you're into, there's going to be a Twitter account out there of somebody that's interested in talking about that every day.
I think that's an important point. And, you know, to folks who may have been using Twitter now since it started in 2007, 2008, it seems obvious, but I think it's not. And I think this is why a lot of people say they don't get or understand Twitter, because they see these elements of people, right, sharing what they had for lunch or things like that, and don't get always that when people do that, it is sharing, because there are people who might be interested and respond to that. And it doesn't have to be about lunch. It can be about music. It can be about culture. It can be about politics. It can be about a number of things which are important to your station, your project, and your audience. But it's knowing kind of a little bit of what that is. And then it sounds like putting your ear to the ground to make sure you're listening back to the feedback and listening to the conversations maybe happening around you, even if it's not in your own specific audience or backyard.
And you have to craft your own message. You have to craft what you're doing, and you eventually have to sort of stick to it. That's what having a great brand of any kind is all about, is like knowing what your message is and sticking to it. But I think it's for anyone has trepidation for opening an Instagram account, opening a Twitter account. Do we really have to do Facebook? You have to know that, to going back to promoting the website, is this is all promoting your website.
So it needs to come back to your home base.
It's got
to
come back to your home base. Everything that you do. And it there's some stuff that can be distracting. There's some stuff that can lead in the direction that's away from getting people back to listening to the station. And if you're doing it well, you've got almost a majority of your posts lead directly back to your website. So I think the type of person that has any type of concern about starting, putting a lot of resources and energy into running social media, that would be the main thing that they would always be going back to anyways, that we need website traffic. Why are we spending all of our time on these sites?
And that's assuming an internet radio, but even probably even for a terrestrial station now, you still want to go back to your website, because that's how your average Twitter user is a high likelihood of listening to your station.
And to that person, what I would immediately follow that with, that understood, is that yes, and your any information that you're putting out across whatever channel you think you should be using for social media should all be saying the same message. You've got to package it slightly differently with the photo or with the way that the link is there, or you can't link in Instagram, or you can link in Twitter, or your whatever it is that you need to, the link that you need to get them back to, the media that goes along with that. It doesn't need, there's so many players out there in the field now with social media channels, but I think we've narrowed down, like we said, sort of nonchalantly earlier, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter are sort of the trifecta there. And I am a firm believer that you need to be putting out the exact same information on every single social media
that
you're using.
Don't hyper-focus on one necessarily, although it, you know, but
obviously the traffic for Facebook is there. Obviously, all of the analytics show that it's 10 times more click-throughs than any other social channel that exists.
Right, but there's no links on the Instagram.
You got it. So again, Instagram is a perfect example how you're, the only link you have is the bio link. Right. Everything is all about come back to our website. Everything is all about if you like this, come back for more.
So when we talked, you know, a week or a half ago when I asked you to be on the show, mm-hmm. the specific thing, I had a very selfish reason because I wanted you to explain Instagram to me. Pretend like I'm, you know, like I know nothing, because I kind of don't know anything. It's ironic. I'm a photographer. I've used Flickr for, you know, something like 11 years. I've been, you know, I've had digital cameras for, you know, even longer than that. And yet I'm not an Instagram user. And I kind of, aside from the fact that I know that you're sharing photos, that's sort of obvious, I kind of have its value as part of an overall kind of social media campaign has eluded me. And I know you're a big believer. So why?
I'm a visual thinker.
Okay.
And that's really why I was going to the bus this morning. I was like, what? It's because I'm a visual thinker. It's because honestly, that's what speaks the most to me, is a big picture and not so many words. I'm definitely, it just resonates with me personally.
And so what do you do on Instagram? For instance, I know that you're through Audio in the Trees, one of your clients is Freeform Portland. You manage social media. So what do you do on Instagram to try and help promote and support Freeform Portland?
Mostly I'm trying to get people to click that bio link.
And how do you do that?
I'm in their feed with a photo or a video, giving them a message of whatever is happening at the station right now. For example,
so how do you? And that's
right now we're trying to get people on our email list.
Okay,
that's our focus.
And so, how do you do that on Instagram though? That's where I kind of have a hard time making the leap. And I'm sure it's just me being dense about it. But how do I use Instagram to do that? I'm a text guy, so I know on Twitter I can write copy. I can write the 140 characters.
Right.
But on Instagram, I'm flummoxed.
I'm thinking of you as like as the podcast, as the station, as the show. You're looking for someone around you who does think that way, that is a creative in that sense,
yeah,
and that can represent everything else that you're doing in the simple snapshots.
So give me an example of something that you would do, of something you put on Instagram, a picture of what?
I would do a close-up picture of your Behringer mixer there with your Apple computer.
Okay.
Showing a little bit of Adobe Premiere, or maybe actually I would do this picture because, I mean, just because I'm being right now, through the glass, seeing Adobe Premiere over your shoulder with your microphone and talking. Exactly. Talking about the anticipation of this episode coming out.
So what we're doing is we're teasing it.
Exactly.
And that's what we do in the copy then, because I guess you get to write long. You get to put in a comment, right?
You got it.
I just went to your Instagram for Freeform Portland, and there's an image of Drake mashed up with Star Wars.
That's a little bit more complex.
I'm a little weird. I'm a little. Well,
but that's great. But I mean, but that, what does that say then? Okay, so I mean, I'm gonna get it didactic for a lot of people that's who aren't already using it, right? That's what we need to do. So what does that say? That kind of mashed up image. I mean, it's fun. I love that sort of stuff.
I think it opens up a whole new conversation, which I'm more than happy to get into. But I think the important part to start with is Instagram is about now. It's about instant. Okay. It's not about going and editing photos and putting them on your feed and getting the perfect exact post right and thinking about a Facebook post for a week and getting it in the queue. And you've got, you know, social media managers get really nerdy about like the week's queues that are coming up and what time they go out. And those things are all extremely important. But Instagram is all about posting right now. So aside from getting together an entire strategy about the time that you're posting and what's going on, posting a close up, mind you, I said close up picture of what your environment of what's happening right now, the show that's being produced, the record, the turntable, the on air sign, the headphones. These are all like essential elements that we get bored with in broadcasting specifically because they're around us all the time, but they're really interesting to the audience.
They're exotic to someone who doesn't broadcast.
They really are.
Right.
And that's just one example, Ben. I'm saying that because this is what I'm looking at right now.
This is where we are, yeah.
But wherever that event is at the bowling alley, you know, people would love to see a picture of the bowling alley.
and maybe their favorite DJ bowling a strike.
Bingo. But it's not about spending a lot of time trying to come up with the most clever thing possible. It's about taking a picture of what's happening right now.
Being in the moment. And I guess, I mean, broadcasting and even podcasting, they're about the moment, really.
100%.
If we make that parallel, because we do edit this show, but we're not going to edit it like Ira Glass will edit This American Life. And most community radio doesn't see that level of production for good reasons.
We're not going to do Radio Lab.
We're not going to do Radio Lab. And that's not a diss on them, but we're living in a different moment, so to speak.
And I just want to speak to the idea that you brought up when asking. I was like, it just doesn't make sense. I'm a photographer and I just don't even, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't want to use it. There's somebody around you that does. If you have a project that's worthy of promoting that you know that you need to promote it with Instagram, there's somebody in your network that would be more than happy to figure out a way to either, you know, send them photos that they can post on your Instagram or just, you know, take it over and have a good time if you can empower somebody. And I realize in community organizations, a lot of times that's a hard leap to make, is trusting an individual to take over a project. But at the same time, you can easily come up with systems to, you know, filter that and censor that and make sure there's great things that are still going up there that represent.
But it's interesting because in my day job, I work for a podcasting company. Mm-hmm. I run our corporate Twitter and they pretty much just handed over the keys.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a very long discussion.
Yeah.
They just sort of said, you seem smart enough to do this, you know, and to not tweet things that are going to get us in trouble, basically. Right. And we spend, and it's interesting because I'm reflecting back, because one of the things we do, we sell advertising on podcasts and we also produce podcasts, is we spend a lot of time retweeting and engaging our podcasters,
mm-hmm.
right. To be sure that we are, you know, and most of them have much bigger followings than our corporate account does. Nevertheless, we certainly want people to know when their next show comes out and when they get kudos or when they have something especially witty or pithy to say or when they get press coverage or when they've just done something really neat.
There's just nobody better than to talk about the shows on your station than those broadcasters.
Yeah.
They're going to give you the most up-to-date exact information about the new guest that's on their show and whatever's happening faster than you can like write up a press release about something. So if you know something's coming up, great. You can, you know, shout it from your social media and whatever you think is the most preferred method to 2 weeks out start. I mean, you can do a whole campaign for it, but you can also just share what your broadcasters are doing and it does get the job done. So,
and I'm going to get back to you. I'm going to push you a little bit on that.
Oh, please
on
do.
The mashup. Right. So you're, I follow Freeform Portland on Facebook. I follow you on Twitter and you mentioned that and you take
We should tell people what Freeform Portland is in case they don't know.
It's a new community. Yeah, I think we did that in the intro.
True.
I don't remember.
New LPFM that's on the way coming
next
year.
Okay, we did. It's a new low-power FM station that's freeform music.
It's a freeform radio station. Freeform PDX on all the socials. And it's to speak directly to that Star Wars Drake mashup that's on the top of the feed right now. I was having beers last night and talking about all of his advertising stuff. And it's the Wild West out there right now. Luckily, I feel very grateful that Freeform Portland allows me to do whatever I want to do in that space. And because it's a nonprofit radio station that's eventually not going to make a lot of money and is not hurting anybody and having a lot of fun and entertaining people, the risk is pretty low.
But what are you communicating?
Like, what I'm communicating, and you see how I immediately went to the fear of the licensing of the material that I'm using, up there. That's, you know, this is like straight Lessig stuff. Like,
yeah, no, we would totally call that, you know, fair use.
It's remix culture, right. And it's all this stuff. What I'm communicating is fun, specifically with this brand. This is specifically what I've said, what Jessica brought to me when we started the project, is that she wanted it to be fun. That was what she kept repeating over and over again. So without having to do much work, I was able just to stick to the original core of what she was saying, which was fun, and continually do fun things. And when I think about fun stuff, I think about Star Wars and pizza and, you know, crazy internet memes. So it makes it really easy for me to share fun stuff that's out there. And then, I mean, again, I'm a weird special case. So I have I get a lot of joy mashing up different GIFs and putting funny music to it and coming up with a 15-second thing that is definitely more articulate than most community stations are going to have the time and energy to do. But at the same time, I bet you there's some weirdo in your station that would love to be doing fun stuff.
I think so. I mean, in my experience in radio in the last 25 years, a lot of that has been people who would make your t-shirts, mm-hmm. who would make your posters, mm-hmm. who would make your advertisements that would run in an alt weekly, or if you had your own newsletter. I mean, right. They're all there and they've been engaged.
Yep.
And now there's these new platforms and new ways to do it. And I think an aspect I think that seems important to me is mm-hmm. that, I mean, on all of these platforms, somebody can reshare. So you make something funny and cool. You can you reshare it on Instagram?
Instagram.
You can't. Yeah, you that's can't. The thing.
But on Twitter and Facebook, you can't.
No, I mean, it'll probably come soon. There's apps that you can use to reshare a photo, reshare a video even.
But do people know, like, if I favorite something or like it on Instagram, do my other people in my network know that I've done that?
Nope.
No.
There's actually an article out, a funny little clickbait article out about that now. But they can, to a certain extent, mm-hmm. see the things that you're liking and the accounts that you're following. But it sort of takes a nerdy, obsessive Instagram user to want to do that and stalk you.
One of the special things that Instagram seems to be is that someone will find a picture and they want to share it with their friend. They'll just mention them in the comments, mm-hmm. And that's the sharing a link.
Right. Yeah, there's a tagging. They've actually added a new share feature they have direct messaging and private messaging in there too.
Yeah.
And you can directly share it to a private message, which they're sidestepping a lot of different legal issues and
right. It's a lot
issues.
Of bottom up stuff. In the same way that Twitter grew, all of the features we think of Twitter, right. Many of them were user driven.
Capital R, capital T.
Yeah.
And then a link to the and then copying and pasting.
And even the @ was a user innovation early Bingo. On.
Yeah. So it's all speaking the same language. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. It's not really that far off of Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. They're all the same damn thing. So getting used to being able to speak that language is the important part about being able to talk about your station in pictures as well as words. And we do need to retread just in case there's somebody out there that did not know. Instagram is Facebook. I mean, it's been Facebook since 2012. It was bought for $1 billion. So again, you should think of it as the same thing. Mm-hmm. That they work together really well. The audience, to a certain extent, a younger audience has moved there, but you can't give in to the fear of missing out type of running to the next social network. That's going to get nowhere. It's more about getting good about talking with pictures and words, mm-hmm. and keeping it brief.
My favorite thing that I read about Instagram that convinced me that, and I was already on it at the time, was somebody posted on Medium, and I should probably, I'll find it and I'll put the link in the show notes, about how he would wake up in the morning and still lying in bed, he'd go to Facebook and he'd get upset and pissed off.
Yes.
Or he'd wake up in the morning and he'd go to Twitter and he'd get upset and pissed off. And then he realized if he woke up in the morning and went to Instagram, everyone on Instagram was posting nice things and things that they were proud of, happy, beauty. So Instagram is sort of this weird oasis on the social networking mini blog platforms where people still are being relatively positive. So it's an affirmation culture where everything else is a little bit complaining.
What do you think of that, Jeff?
I think you're hitting on some really important points with the state of social media in 2015, the state of our culture, American culture, which is the culture I know, the culture I grew up in, the culture that I see is completely rotten at its very foundations of what it teaches us in all of the public school systems. And obviously that's a little bit of a cynical view, but at the same time, of course you see that negatively reflected.
It's the kind of cynicism I'm used to seeing on Twitter.
I mean, exactly. No, exactly. And I think you nailed some really important points there. And, I've spent a lot of time trying to create that oasis now. So that's really what the Drake Star Wars mashup comes down to maybe answer that question more directly, because I had to sort of let that question permeate, is that I'm trying to create that oasis mm-hmm. now, and that with a lot of the projects, and that's what I'm saying, I'm being enabled by Freeform Portland too. That's a big part of our culture is fun, is the fact that, you know, yes, there's a radio show, but also there's a pizza party after the radio show. And that's real. Like there's really a part, we're all going across the street and having drinks or whatever. And making that a part of the culture is fun to do. And so, I think to have that type of non-cynical, silly, not ashamed type of oasis for people to go to, that it's just fun.
I mean, that's what good radio does often.
I totally
not agree. All. I mean, there is good radio that is about the problems of the world and the problems of our system, but there's also
democracy,
great radio and many others. And there's also great radio that takes us away, and not just escapism,
yep.
but in often ways that are critical. So what is the cost of not really engaging on social media?
In
2015,
you look like an amateur who's not paying attention. You look like
whom though?
To everyone below the age of 40. I don't know. I mean, that's
right.
Obviously,
well, I mean, I think
ageist as well as a vast overgeneralization at the same time. But what I'm saying is, it's like whatever way the social media landscape and the digital landscape in our smartphones unfolds, it's going to continue to be important to have a stake in that space.
So what you're saying, to some extent, if I'm correct, is that, I mean, to some extent, you're losing out on folks, one, who are plugged in, but two, that folks who are grown up plugged in.
Exactly, exactly. And I think you find that you have different audiences all within the same station, and that audience wants you there bad. They really want you there. They want to be a fan of you there. They want to like you. They want to like your posts. So if you can just figure out a way to enable, you know, the type of programmer artistic mentalities that are already in your station to do that stuff, there's just so many positive results from it. Even if you can only post once a week for a start. But the reality is, if you're not posting every day, you're not part of someone. Okay, this is the thing. You have the opportunity to be in their day. It's not like you need to be there, but you're given this free opportunity through the guise of Facebook's corporate web of, you know, yes, right. I realize there's an entry fee, which is like basically giving away or mm-hmm. participating and giving away private information about your listeners to a corporation. They're going to give away, those users are already giving
right.
away
they
all
can
of
opt
their
in or out.
Exactly. They're already making that choice. They're adults. We're all adults here. And some of us are children or more childlike and don't care. And I think that's the general mentality of youth, if I was going to overgeneralize, is that it's just not a big deal. I have nothing to hide.
And you made a point I thought it was interesting that you said people want you to be there. And I think that made a light bulb go off in my head, because it's in that same way of like you find something new and interesting that captures your attention. It could be anything, but it could be a radio station. It could be a podcast. And there's this desire to know more, right? And know more in a very informational sense, but there's also that larger ineffable sense, right, which is aura or personality that isn't quite so straightforward, right? And it seems like Twitter or an Instagram or Facebook, not only is it findable, first of all, but second, it provides that extra information.
And I think it's important to note in 2015 too, that the push, the direction of all of this stuff seems to be going private in general, or at least a feeling of more privacy to the end user having a private live feed of the things that they like that maybe isn't Facebook. Maybe they have a Facebook page or a Twitter page, or maybe they never got on Twitter, but they have a Snapchat account and they have all of these other Yik Yak's another one that's really popular in universities right now that they're using to communicate in very quick ways over the sides of the community. And the privacy is, like we talked about before, is something that not specifically privacy, but I'm talking more about the way that information is shared privately, like over text messages. You mm-hmm. would share something with your mom or with a boyfriend or girlfriend or a husband or a wife in a different way than you would share them on social networks, and would share different material. And when you have like a targeted audience that really cares about what they're going to see, which I think many times is what that Instagram audience is they're very excited about being able to follow you on that and get instant updates from what's going on mm-hmm. before everyone else.
Right.
But that's always going to happen with any, there's going to be a new network soon. There's going to be a new channel soon that somebody's going to be doing. And the important thing is what do you have to share? So, I mean, we can get bogged down on all the details of how
but I think that's right. Yeah.
But you eventually need to not worry about the exact channel, and maybe Facebook's the most popular thing right now. But it's going to be the same thing that you're sharing on your website. Eventually you're just having to articulate it in a way that, you know, small businesses and community radio stations have never had to really do before, is like articulate their mission statement and articulate it into an ad campaign when it comes down to it, that they're doing themselves. The reality is there's a lot of forgiveness there.
I think
from the audience's point of view, the fact that you're just in the space playing around and trying to have fun and engaging volunteers is worth your time. It's worth your time and energy. That's for sure. I don't know if we're making a good case for using Instagram.
No, I think so. I mean, you are actually, to me, because it was a legitimate question. It was sincere and I wanted to get it better. And I think you did. And part of that, I think, you know, stations can be guided by that mission. And remember, you know, is this consistent with what we would put on air? Then it's consistent with what we can do here, which may mean at times it pushes certain boundaries and at times it doesn't. But it also, you know, if you wouldn't put it on air, don't put it on your Instagram.
You had earlier mentioned close-ups. I'm really curious why a close-up is better than a long shot on an Instagram feed promoting a radio station in particular.
Because you're viewing it on a mobile device that has a very small photo that you have to, if you want to look at something that's a long shot, you're putting it right up to your eye to try to see something in the distance or zoom in on it. There's no zoom, really.
Right.
It's not social media. So like,
Instagram cannot zoom.
Exactly. So, you know, you take a lot of pictures, especially in the music industry stuff that I'm involved in. You take a lot of pictures of stages, a lot of pictures of bands on stages. And, you know, when you're a radio station, a lot of times you're promoting bands and things that are happening, musical events in the community. The most boring possible photo that you could put on Instagram is a full stage shot of four people standing there with instruments.
Because they look like little army men in the distance.
And more importantly, it looks like every other picture right. of four people standing on a stage playing instruments on Instagram. You know, you just get a little closer. That's a totally nitpicky, tiny little thing. But I think to get back to the greater point is that, you know, Instagram is going to go away too. And I thought it was going to go away in 2011 or 12, and it just keeps getting more exciting the last couple of years. People keep adopting, but it's going to go away too. The important part is that, you know, all of these organizations are changing their names to add media into the name of the brand for good reason, because you're a radio station. You can't just do audio anymore. I don't think anyone's fighting that. I think that's what every conference across the country is probably about. I wouldn't particularly go to it. That's not my style or my right. scene, but I, depending on the specific topics, it's interesting to me as an audio engineer, but it's like, great. So I think we can all agree that the reason why the name of your company changed to media is because you are not allowed to just think in audio terms anymore. You've got to start thinking visually and, you know, do the stuff you do best, which is organizing volunteers and empowering creative people to do really fun stuff. I mean, that's what radio stations are really good at. So you just need to empower them to do it visually as well as in an audio space.
And one important point you put out was that on Instagram in particular, but in all of these platforms. Bring folks, direct them back to your website.
Oh, gotcha.
So can you say quickly, is this something that you're able to give any advice on, is how do we make sure then when people are directed back to that website that it's a useful experience? I understand that not every station can spend hours and hours, you know, updating every moment the same way that you might, you know, turn to CNN.com or Salon.com, several times a day. But what should a station be sure, you know, could be a station, could be a podcast, could be online, could be terrestrial, should be sure is there so that it's useful, I think, is really the qualifier.
A play button for your radio station? I mean, you know, it you seems say like that, a big you triangle that's like you push and it plays the radio station.
You say that, right? Yeah. You know, and you looked at me as though like you're
like a trick question.
The
like,
obvious. No, and I wasn't even because it wasn't a trick question because I really want to know because I also know I've looked at plenty of station websites, mostly community.
I'm mostly teasing. Website development is sort of a whole different topic.
But it's more about just what is the content.
The important part is that if you've put as an organization, you've put the energy into creating a web committee and creating a website and re-updating it again. You know, a lot of stations, they have the site and then 6 years later they need to rebuild the site.
Right.
I mean, obviously we're only a couple generations into this whole website thing, but at the same time, or can you say a single generation? Are we a single generation?
It's 25 years.
Well, we're not talking about human lifespans. We're talking about
radio
internet.
Stations, like since the advent of the
right.
internet.
But the internet lifespan of a generation is a different thing than a human infant to grow to a breeding human lifespan. Because you were saying that you thought Instagram was going to go away, and that's because in internet generation terms, it's weird that things tend to be living longer all of a sudden in the most recent. Cycle yeah. than they used to.
Facebook hasn't even been around for a decade or just a decade, right. 10 years, you know? So anyway, back to the website is that you've probably as an organization spent a lot of time defining what your radio station stands for and what it is. So you have, or you're having that meeting anyway, you know what I mean? And it's like, to a certain extent, you're doing justice to all of the time and energy you spent creating that website that, you know, the conference has told you
I think the play
10
button,
years ago that you needed. I mean, oh, okay, good
it's
call,
super
good call.
Clear. I mean, no, because you just said that and I've looked at so many, particularly commercial radio station websites where I can't figure out what the hell I'm supposed to do with that station. And I certainly have no idea how I would even begin to listen.
Yeah, end up using TuneIn.
And I do know that I looked at some stations I like a lot, community stations mostly or independent stations. I can find their website and I know, big stupid button for big stupid Paul to click. And I think the other thing I'd point out, I'm going to answer my own question here, though, but it just occurred to me as we're talking, is that since we're doing most of this on a handheld little device, is that a website better be readable on a handheld little device?
100%. And you better be able to read the name of the track that's playing right now.
Make it –
the show that's right now. I mean, and I wasn't really answering the question pragmatically.
No, it's like, okay.
But I see what you're getting at now. And if you're going to spend all of this time having a social presence, your website should be tuned up and – That's really what you need.
And it seems like it needs to be simple.
You need and that would be the other thing I was going to say is that as simple as possible, a play button, what is playing right now, and then you know websites, radio station websites especially, can get really deep with all of the content that you have, all of the broadcasters, all the shows, all the everything. But on the surface level, on that splash page, keep it really simple. Let them play the station and let them know what everyone when they go to the site, they want to know what's playing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been there many times. Jeff, this is fantastic.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I feel like I'm just babbling over here. hopefully some of this made some sense.
I'm just trying to figure out how quickly do I need to jump into creating the Radio Survivor Instagram account.
Yes.
I saw that you had it saved. I followed you today. I think there's two followers now. Somebody took the time to park it.
I didn't know it was there.
Which was smart.
No, actually, I think if you're looking at Radio Survivor, it's some Russian dude.
Oh, no. Russians.
We do not own our name on Instagram.
Well, I followed some Russian dude this morning.
Yeah. Who has no photos.
I'll reach out to him.
You know, I've learned, you know, if only I knew in 2009 what I know now, which is reserve your name, your screen name, ASAP on every platform Not because somebody's necessarily going to try and claim jump you, but they may just stumble into the name.
No, that's really important. And if I was, we didn't really put the whole point of this conversation into terms of tips and tricks for your social media presence. Yeah. But if we would have gone in that direction, that would have been one of the first things I've said is that, you know, once you decide what your handle is, get it on all channels. Even if you don't think you want to use them, even if you're positive you are not going to spend any resources on Instagram, get the Instagram handle. Please do that. Put your logo in there. Don't post in it, though. You know, fine, great. Don't post in it. But you've got to grab it. It's Mark Zuckerberg did not pay $1 billion for no reason at all. It's just the dude's got a good track record.
So, Jeff, where can people learn more about Audio in the Trees and some of your work?
Well, my website's jeffreysimmons.com, which is J-E-F-F-O-R-Y. That's also my handle on all the old networks. I do a weekly radio show on X-Ray, which is my sort of where I blow off steam, which is really fun, on Tuesdays from 2 to 4. It's called Country Feedback is that show. And in one of the brands that I advertise for on Audio in the Trees is a weekly post that I make for my radio show, Country Feedback, which is fun. Fun is what it comes down to, and finding the joy and stuff for me, especially right now. And I think if there's anything I could leave your audience with, it's that you don't want to jump into something like Instagram or Twitter or even Facebook because of necessity. You want to get into it because it's fun and because the audience out there wants to have fun with you. And to get away from that, the whole negativity that ends up, we see a lot out there right now, it's going to continue to happen. So, you specifically have the ability to be a positive force and be a voice of fun and of community. So, yeah.
Celebrate the things that you're passionate about.
Yeah.
The good things.
Absolutely. Well, this is a lot of fun. So for me, and I hope it was for everyone listening, thanks so much for joining us, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
My pleasure.
I really enjoyed talking with Jeff. So glad I have had the opportunity to meet him since moving here to Portland. And, you know, we sort of brushed aside a little bit the idea of tips and tricks and sort of the real practicalities of using Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, I think, were the three that we really focused on. But, you know, I think if you're somebody who's listening and you've got questions, we'd love to hear about it. And we'd love to capture the hive mind. So certainly I know Jeff would be more than willing to come back and help answer some of these questions. We can do it on the show, but we can also do it on our new Radio Survivor forums.
Yes.
Discussion forums because we really want to broaden this conversation and not have it just be a conversation that you send us an email and we answer and read on the air, that we'd love to do that. But also we'd love to bring in all the listeners to try and discuss these things, because we know a lot of you are doing some amazing things on Instagram and on Facebook and on your station's websites or your podcast website or your radio show's website. And you could really help to school us as well and add to the this gathering corpus of best practices in and around making great, great radio. So go to radiosurvivor.com/forum. We have forum around this podcast. We have forums around podcasting.
Right. And if people want to participate, we're asking just them to simply create an account.
Yeah. There's links there to do it. It's free. We will not sell your information.
Ever.
We are not using it to mine for advertising or anything like
that. Quite the opposite. The reason we built the forum was to remove our community from those data miners.
Yeah. We're not saying don't use Facebook. We're not saying don't use Twitter. What we are saying, though, is I think that we can create this great community around these ideas and these discussions and make it useful, make it searchable, make it findable, and not have to worry about how it is also something that we can data mine for some other completely unrelated purpose.
No, the only data mining is answers to questions about how to make radio and podcasts by listeners and readers.
I think that's it. So please join us at radiosurvivor.com/forum.
Yeah. So, Paul, right at the end there of that lengthy interview with Jeff, thank you so much to Jeff for coming in and talking with us, by the way. You were wondering aloud, gosh, I hope that listeners care about this as much as I just did. And that, to me, reminded me of something I've been thinking about constantly because I just very recently started three new podcasts. And one has to wonder who the audience could possibly be for all these strange things that I've come up with. But the only thing that I can trust is that, well, I care about this a lot. So I must do it. And because I'm a human being on the earth, there's a relatively good chance that another human being on the earth will care about this, at least to a certain extent, and they are the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you can do. So you have to follow your own compass.
I think so.
You're doing the work, and you really wanted to learn something about social media for community radio and why Instagram matters. And there's got to be another person on the earth who has that same question in their minds, and or didn't even know they did, and now they're happy that the answer has been provided to them by this podcast.
Or who hears, you know, you need to be on Twitter, you need to be on Instagram, and is like, okay, what do I do? Is it going to be worth it? Is this just one more distraction? Is it one thing that keeps me looking at my phone rather than getting my work done?
Right.
Those are all great questions.
You know, Jeff didn't say this, and I will say it on his behalf, on behalf of social media. The distraction is already something that people are willingly engaging in,
yeah,
for whatever reason. And some are good and some are bad. They're staring at their phone already. And the idea that you can use that moment that they're already engaged in to pull them towards your station, that's a net benefit to the world. You've taken their distracted moment and given them something to like, a radio station that you like.
Yeah, and who says distraction is always bad?
Depends on how stressed out they
are.
Yeah,
but, you know, and I feel like social media has been a net plus in my life.
Hmm.
I wouldn't have met you.
Oh, yeah.
For instance.
I forgot about starting
down the road of creating this podcast.
I said hi to you on Twitter first.
Yep, you sure did.
How
and
funny.
Social media has provided, and I don't think I would know Jeff either. Again, I think I became aware of Jeff and reached out to him because of social media, because he was doing it on behalf of, at that time, probably X-Ray and Radio 23. It has provided me an opportunity to know people who I find to be interesting and smart and doing cool things that would have been much harder for me to know about otherwise. And, you know, in things like Facebook, interpersonally, certainly it allowed me to keep up relationships with people whom I like but are very far away.
Yeah.
And reconnect with people who I hadn't seen in years and was so thrilled to find because we'd lost touch. So, you know, yes, it has the pluses and minuses, and we maybe give up something in the process. But for me, it's been a net plus, and I enjoy, you know, I go on Twitter and I enjoy it, and then I go and I leave it. The way I manage it is I don't have email alerts. I don't have Twitter alerts. I don't have Facebook alerts.
On your phone specifically.
I don't let these things buzz me.
Yeah.
I go and look when I'm ready to look. And I look enough that I don't really seem to miss anything super pertinent or really important, you know, and that's how I personally manage it. I'm not telling anyone how to live their life. But to that larger point of, you know, if you're interested, somebody else probably is. I mean, that is the thing that has birthed so many amazing projects, especially community-based projects or projects that have a real grassroots element. I mean, you know, that's sort of the punk rock ethos. It's the ethos of zines. It was the ethos of fanzines, you know, predating zines, when people were sharing, you know, their own thoughts about science fiction or about movies,
right.
You know, 50, 60 years ago when they were doing a mimeograph machines. Community radio is based upon that same impulse.
Right, and this reminds me of Dave Zirin's advice about what you should follow as a writer when we went to that conference last month. What was that conference, Paul? Help me.
It was Creating and Consuming Media for a Better Future. It was hosted by the University of Oregon School of Journalism and Communication at their Turnbull Center here in Portland.
I'm so glad you had that at your fingertips. And we were lucky. It was such a privilege to be there. And we saw some Nation Magazine writers who were there on the panel. And Dave Zirin mentioned that for him, the point of being a writer, an indie writer, and this rings true for all indie media creators, so any podcaster is probably going to fall into that category, is to follow what you want to do, especially and most importantly if other people aren't doing it. So look for that one thing in your life that you care about that's being left out of everyone else's list of things they care about. And chances are, you don't care about it because you're weird or crazy and everyone else. It's like the fact that you've noticed that it's missing from the spectrum of things that are being talked about, trust that instinct and go with it. And chances are you found something important in the world that needs to be talked about more. That's a it's as good a reason to write an investigative journalism piece as it is to start a podcast.
We can't guarantee fame and fortune. We can't guarantee millions of downloads. But I think we can say that if you want to get to those places, this is probably where you have to start.
Yeah. I did it. I'm starting something ridiculous that I would love to tell Radio Survivor listeners about. Ridiculous because because I found the niche of the niche. I took a minority and dug into that minority's minority until I found another minority within that minority, and then I'm building a podcast just for them. So if I have dozens of listeners, I will celebrate. It's a Yiddish book club. And I'm getting it up off the ground, and it's called Yiddish Book Club. But
and
it's
how
not,
is your Yiddish?
It's I don't have a bit, but my ancestors did, and that's why I'm interested. And what I've discovered is that prior to World War II, obviously, prior to the Holocaust, Yiddish was an international language with a whole that they sold a lot of books, and there were a lot of writers writing in Yiddish. Unlike other languages that were popular at the time or still popular, those languages were all usually linked to nations. The Yiddish language was international, and it was an international, there was an international literature. So there's all of these books and stories out there. Many, many, many of them have been translated into English, but a lot of them haven't been. And I've found some Yiddish translators who will talk to me, and we're going to launch a podcast about these books. So, you know, there's an example of a very strange thing to be passionate about. But I'm pretty sure that I'm alone in the world of radio and podcasting. Well, not alone, just unique at the moment to care about it so much to record their voices.
But probably not alone in your interest.
Yeah, well, hopefully. We'll see, right?
There's at least, you know, three other people.
There. Well, I found those three people, and
that's what I'm saying.
We're recording together, and I'll definitely let people know in the show notes the easiest way they can hear that stuff.
Always find our show notes at radiosurvivor.com/podcast.
Up next on the program, I have excerpts from a conversation that I recorded with our own Matthew Lassar on Turntable FM style websites. There's been more than a couple, but none have been able to thrive.
This is just, it's just a sort of cascading story of cascading, failing Turntable websites. And for some reason or other, I'm just fascinated by the fact that no company has been able to make this concept work, even though the concept itself is really fun.
That fun is basically an online version of a record listening party where people gather to listen to and collaborate on live DJ sets and chat about it. Matthew was a huge fan when this first emerged a number of years ago.
And I loved it. I loved Turntable FM because there were all these wonderful music sharing, music communities that were sort of like community radio stations. There was even a classical music Turntable FM radio station that was run by a bunch of music students at the University of Colorado. And I hung out there a lot, but most of them, it was like 5 million dub track stations.
Right, of course.
And by July of 2011, just a few months after it opened, Turntable FM, or TT.FM as it was now ubiquitously called, had a valuation of $35 million. And labels opened up their own rooms in partnership with Turntable FM. And it seemed like it was going to completely revolutionize the online music sharing ecosphere. And it didn't.
Turntable FM, like so many other internet startups, shut down, despite its large number of users.
And then it ran out of cash, and it closed its doors in 2013. And It was a really big deal. I mean, it was this thing that, you know, skyrocketed, you know, straight up the stratosphere and then just crashed so quickly.
The next big turntable FM style website to come on the scene was Plug DJ, which Matthew also put some time into as a fan and a user. 6 weeks ago, Plug DJ announced it was shutting down. That was September 28th, 2015. There are others still out there, but they're barely even really there when you compare them with what there used to be on the scene.
We've gone from Turntable FM, which was the toast of the town, all the way to where nobody quite knows where this is going. Believe it or not, there are a couple of entrepreneurs who are going to start new sites and try and do this again. And the concept, you know, the concept, it feels like it's very, very sound, but online community sharing like this, there doesn't seem to be any particular commercial model for it. It doesn't seem to be something where you can do this and really figure out how to make money from your participants. And so I'm left, you know, thinking about this because I'm such a fan of this thing, with the idea that this is something that could be taken up by libraries and schools. And the reason I say that is because it's an open source model at this point. There's the code for some of these sites is now actually available online. You can just go and you can pick it up. And if you're a coder, you can probably just template it and repurpose it. And it would seem to me that this is something that libraries and schools could be encouraged to use for, you know, certain kinds of purposes and, you know, for classes and for clubs and things like that on an ongoing basis. And as long as they don't have to, you know, really try to make money off of it, I think it could function pretty well. But I'm still waiting to see anybody make a success out of this on a commercial level, and I don't see that happening in any time in the near future.
Libraries again. Here we are. This is a podcast that is supposed to be about community radio, and yet nearly every episode of the podcast we bring up libraries. I love this. And here we are again.
Well, community institutions dedicated to learning and literacy, there seems to be a pretty strong synergy there.
Yeah, I wondered because of this if what we're leading towards, if everything goes okay for our civilization, if in 100 years a library and a community radio station are really going to be one and the same. I don't know why that popped into my head, but that's the sort of imagination that started up because of this conversation.
They are the one and the same in some places. Fort Wayne, Indiana, the public library there has a new low-power FM license.
There you go. Maybe less than 100 years. So yeah, libraries and academic institutions are Matthew's last best hope at the moment because the free market couldn't pull this one off.
One of the things that I did, occasionally I teach a course on the history of radio and recorded sound. And back when Plug DJ was functioning, I actually posted a link to my room, which was called the Hybrid Highbrow Room. yes, I know. And students would come and students with Twitter or Facebook with Twitter accounts would come and visit me in the room, and we would play music together, and we would chat about the class and whatever. And you know, I just thought that it was great fun to have a bunch of students and to be chatting with them in my little Plug DJ room, and us playing the music and talking about music and the history of radio and recorded sound. And I think that classes like that could use rooms like that for various, you know, pedagogical purposes. I think that also, you know, there's a library. I think it's the University of Denver, I think, has its own local streaming music collections where it streams, you know, local bands, et cetera, on a special application on its library website. Mm-hmm. And I could see libraries, you know, offering a continuous stream of local content and local music from their library on a Plug DJ Turntable FM kind of room. What's needed for that is there would need to be somebody, some entrepreneur, providing that kind of software and then allowing libraries and schools to license it out relatively cheaply, and the company keeping you know, keeping the software functional.
So yeah, it seems like it's a question of platforms again, to bring it back to another newly discovered theme of the podcast, Radio Survivor. Where do people gather to share all this information that they care about? Did they gather onto Facebook to talk about stuff they like? Do they gather onto WFMU's website to talk about the music they care about? People were gathering on Plug DJ to talk about the music they cared about, and now that
But importantly, to listen
to
the music they cared about.
Yeah, but you know, it was interesting because Matthew seemed to care just as much about the conversations around the listening as he did about the listening.
But yeah, it's the conversation, but I think it's important to be able to hear it while you're having that text conversation, I think.
Yeah. So the community that came together, these communities were difficult to monetize for these websites, but that doesn't lessen the fact that they were there and that the passion was still there. I made a joke that we should get it going on Radio Survivor, because I know that we have the resources to devote to such a thing. Turntable FM style music listening communities where people can chat with one another. We don't have that, but we do have the forums, so text only. And we can all certainly argue about things like hybrid highbrow on those forums.
And you could probably post a YouTube video or something like that of a song if you wanted to subject it to scrutiny.
We should let listeners know that Hybrid Highbrow has now become an inside joke, I suppose, on Radio Survivor, because Matthew proposed that genre to the troubled Santa Cruz public station as
community station.
Community station as one of their potential futures to solve their problem. And it was a genre that, well, I won't get into it. We'll put it in the show notes because Matthew gets into it in a very detailed way in like episode 2, I think. I love it. Way back. So we, just like other podcasts, we're now developing our inside jokes, and I want to make sure that listeners don't feel left out. If they want to know why I laughed at Hybrid Highbrow, it'll be in the show notes.
When I was in the classical of any kind room, we would often have arguments about various classical composers and classical music and soundtracks versus symphonies and all these interesting things. And we would get all heated and sweaty about various things. And in retrospect, it was lots of fun.
You can read all about Matthew's exploration into the next generation of these turntable rooms in a post titled Online Turntable Rooms, The Next Generation. You'll find a link to that and to many of the things we're talking about in our show notes, radiosurvivor.com/podcast.
And also in the show notes for today's episode, we'll have a link to the full conversation that Matthew and I had. It went into a lot of detail about both the concept and the practice of these turntable FM style radio website communities. Matthew got in a plug for his new book because I think there's a lot of overlap with this conversation and the book that he's writing about internet radio. I hope I'm not getting that wrong.
I think the future of radio.
The future of radio. Radio 2.0, I believe, is what he calls that book. And so on. And I it was a really fun conversation. It was 25 minutes long. So instead of cramming that whole thing into this podcast, we're going to have it up as a bonus episode on Radio Survivor. Up next, a special edition of College Radio Watch. Paul and Jennifer together again.
Hi, Jennifer. Well, this week you're here back in Portland because we both attended CMJ's first college day on tour, which happened here in Portland, Oregon, with a bunch of college stations and community stations who came together for a day of panels and music, talking about both operating a station as well as elements that have a little bit more to do with music and the music industry, which college radio is actually quite well intertwined with. How did you enjoy the day?
I thought it was great. They had a mix of roundtable discussions and panels and keynotes and performances. And you can tell that people from other stations are just hungry to connect with people from other stations, because often we're just sort of in our own insular world at our radio stations. And I think we were told that there might have been around 17 stations there today from, you know, mostly Oregon and Washington. There was somebody from a Canadian station. I was there from a California station. So they got a pretty good turnout. Probably around 100 people were there for this all-day event. And it was great. I mean, personally, it was fun to catch up with some people who I've met before at radio stations in Oregon, for the most part. And there were other people. There was somebody there who I had met when he was a freshman at a college radio station. When I happened to stop by, he was doing his show early on a Sunday morning, I think. And now he's the general manager of his college radio station.
What station is that?
KDUP at University of Portland. So for me, it's also cool to see things kind of come full circle. Like, oh, I remember meeting you when you were just starting out at your station.
Yeah, I think, you know, the issue for anyone who works in grassroots radio, whether it's college or community, is always that the work of running the station is so substantial that there is plenty of intent and desire to reach out and network with other stations, but it's difficult to find and make those opportunities. And when everyone is facing those same challenges, it doesn't happen. And so it's nice when an organization can provide that, whether it's like the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, which did regional summits this last year, and now CMJ is doing it and sponsoring that, because you know, even the national conferences can be great, and you went to CBI recently, but that also requires more money in particular and planning on for the constituent stations to get that together. I'm glad to see that CMJ is sort of making good kind of on its historical role in college radio, and I also appreciate the fact that they invited community stations to participate, including X-Ray, which is a community station, new one here in Portland, as well as KBOO, which is a now, you know, going on nearly 50-year-old community station here in Portland, which also reports to CMJ, because CMJ covers community radio stations as well as college stations in terms of providing them with taking their music charts and providing coverage.
And also some hybrid stations like Chaos at Evergreen State College, which, you know, they have a large number of student DJs and community DJs. So they were there as well. They had a nice group from Chaos. What I liked about this event, too, was that it was a chance for people to connect with people from this region. And you could see kind of the wheels spinning and people, you know, starting to figure out how to make connections not only with other stations, but also with some of the local labels who were there. And with you, you know, Paul lives in Portland, so he was able to make connections with people in the radio community, and I thought that was really great. So that's something that's different from, you know, if you go to a national conference, you have people from all over and you make connections. But to make connections with people who are in your town or in your state, they might actually be working on some projects. Some of these stations may be working directly on some projects in the short term, which I think is exciting.
Yeah, and you participated in the first panel, which was basically why radio, which actually seemed to be the kind of a strange topic given given everyone there sort of is already on board with radio. It wasn't as if it were like a broader media conference where there might be people who weren't into it.
A few of us were joking. Well, I think a few of us independently had thought of just saying, why not?
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah, obviously we all are here and we believe in radio. I think they were trying to open the conference with sort of a big picture. You know, they called it the big question, why radio? So I think the idea was to talk about why is radio relevant? They asked us, you know, what's your elevator pitch if people are asking you, is radio dying? So we talked about that. And, you know, clearly for me, you know, I'm here at Radio Survivor writing about radio every day, talking about it on the podcast. So I think about this stuff probably more than most people. But everyone on the panel has thought about these questions,
too. Yeah, they had a pitch, and it included folks from Chaos and Olympia and
KDUP,
and I don't remember what Nikki's station is, do you?
Yeah, Nikki is at Western Washington University in Ellensburg, Washington, Nikki Mara. So she's the program director. She has a paid position there. Then there was the student general manager of KDUP, and he was the person I referenced who I met when he was a freshman, and now he's a senior and the general manager. And then Anna from Chaos, she's the music director there. So we all talked about our own personal experiences and why we think radio is important and relevant. And
I enjoyed hearing from Nikki because she also talked about the importance of relevance and making that relevance clear to the campus community and the larger community. And she clearly has made that an objective of working at her station. And, you know, she is someone who made a documentary as she moved to Western Washington from the East Coast to take this job, and she visited College stations and got a little better sense of the broadness of College stations and the different ways in which they operate and they broadcast. And so I asked her to repeat what she said on the panel because I thought it was great in both explaining why she thought making the case for your relevancy was important, but more importantly, she explained how they actually do it.
My name is Nikki Mara. I'm the program director for KCWU, Central Washington University.
And you just spoke on a panel, and you mentioned how it was vital for a college station to be relevant. I think relevant both to its campus and to, like, the town. Can you talk a little bit more about why, what made that seem important to you and how you came to that kind of recognition?
Sure. Well, when I took the job at KCWU, I did the college radio road trip. I moved from Philadelphia to the middle of Washington State, to this little town, and I visited 7 different college radio stations along the way. I got a cross-section of budgets, of hierarchy, of student versus pro staff, and it really opened my eyes to what makes college radio work versus why college radio stations are closing down. And when I took the job, it was really important for myself and Travis Box, the general manager at KCWU, for us to make sure that our budget, even though we were well-funded, to make sure our budget was intact. And we came up with, we really needed to stay relevant for ourselves, to our administration, and also to our community. And that's a really difficult thing, a balance to kind of teeter on. And especially for us in Central Washington, in Ellensburg, because our town is a very conservative town. The people who originated from there are ranchers, they're farmers, and there really is this town and gown divide. And the people from the university are very liberal. There's professors, there's students coming from Seattle, the West Side. And so what we're trying to do at the radio station is, one, cater to the university, cater to those students who are coming from all walks of life, and then also move into the community, go to different events, help the downtown association, and then also manage up to our administration. And we do that by, we do over 175 events a year. And that really takes a toll on our volunteers, on our promotions department, on it takes a toll on all of our students and our volunteers.
What does it mean to do an event? What do you do?
That's a great question. It means different things for different types of events, of course. But normally, it means taking our remote equipment out, taking a Newmark, which will play music, taking monitors, taking speakers, playing music, creating an atmosphere of fun, really. And that's really what they're looking for. They want us to enhance whatever event they already have going on. And it helps to promote their event, creates more exposure for them. It makes an event out of something that might not have been a huge event for them. And we help with the promotion. We help with the exposure. We help maybe with the organization of whatever the event is. And then in return, it helps our students with gaining experience. They learn how to set up the equipment. They learn how to run the equipment. They learn how to MC an event. They learn how to network with people in the community, with people at the university. So it is a mutually beneficial experiment or mutually beneficial, it's a mutually beneficial endeavor for both whoever we're working with. But in the end, we're gaining ties in the community, we're gaining ties at our university, and most of all, we're gaining relevancy. And by remaining relevant, it really reduces the chance that they're going to take away our funding.
They know who you are. They can see tangible benefits from the station existing.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's it. That's not the only reason. I mean, we go to conferences, we are bringing home awards, we are doing creative works. They see us out at events that mean something, that are culturally relevant. So they know that our students are emotionally engaged in what's happening in the campus and community. And that means something.
That's great. Great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
So that was Nikki Mara, who is the program director of KCWU at Western Washington University. And I appreciate how she highlighted the student experience out of this, that not only does it promote the station and keep it relevant, but part of that relevancy goes back to making sure the students are getting a good learning experience. And it's sort of pre-professional. And whether it's pre-professional specifically to be in radio, she just sort of highlighted it's pre-professional because you're really getting the kind of skills you probably use in any job. And I had a little roundtable discussion. There was a breakout session where students could talk about different issues with different groups. And I led a kind of group discussion about operations. And, you know, we covered a lot of different topics, from sort of keeping volunteers motivated to dealing with, you know, the occasional trouble volunteer and things like this. But an element that also came up again, and this is the students themselves brought up, was a way to keep volunteers motivated and to bring in volunteers really to the station is to focus on some of that experiential, pre-professional stuff, that it's not just about getting on the radio, but it's about leadership skills, organizational skills, and the fact that they can walk away with references. And there was one student in particular, you know, mentioned how, you know, a great evaluation for your show and for your work is something that may help you down the line, whether you're getting a job or going to graduate school or applying for fellowships and scholarships, that you would have now someone who can speak to your experiences, to be your reference and say your performance was great at the radio station and it really was a leadership experience. And that's something I've experienced myself as a college radio advisor. I've given dozens of references to students, both for scholarships, whether on campus or off campus, but as well as to employers like Google and New York Public Radio, talking about how their experience at the station, where they demonstrated leadership, organization, and all these great skills that will help them in the workplace.
Yeah, I know I've talked to people who have said that their experience doing college radio was one of the most important experiences of their college career. You know, because you're working together as a group to do something creative, but you're also running a business, managing people. And, you know, there are a lot of stations where they aren't necessarily pre-professional. Not many people go on to the radio industry or even the music industry. But, you know, nevertheless, just the experience of being music director and having interactions with promoters and record labels and managing music staff and writing reviews and having deadlines, showing up to your radio show on time, you know, all of that is such great experience for so many careers. And we talked to somebody again this weekend about how it's communication skills that you're also picking up, you know, anytime you're working at a radio station as a student. So I don't think that should ever be underestimated, the power of that experience. And I went to Haverford College, and somebody told me there was some student fair, like a recruitment fair, or maybe a fair for new students who were coming in. And one of the students at the radio station said, yeah, you know, the real secret is that the real action at this school is all the student clubs. You know, it's
right,
not what's going on in the classroom, but this is where it all really happens.
I think so. And that was a thread that was pretty clear, I think, at this particular event. And I guess there will be additional ones that will be scheduled where they're going to go to other cities so that students from other regions have the opportunity to meet up and also discuss a lot of these issues. But I think, you know, that's a key to me as part of, you know, Nikki's talking about the relevancy, and it's something that we've talked about quite a bit, that the survival of college radio really depends on stations making that relevancy and that visibility almost job one. But at a big aspect of it is also to make sure it is clear, I think, both to the students involved as well as to your administrators and other stakeholders, that the experience at the station is one that is about, it's educational in its very heart, whether it's specifically about radio, whether it's about these larger groups of skills that we've been talking about. And also it's something which really helps them for their future careers, because, you know, while we all, I think many of us like to talk about sort of, you know, the greatness of education for its own sake, people really do go to college because they hope to have good careers afterwards. And the radio station's role in that is key and is important. And I think being able to highlight that both to the students who want to be involved, who are involved, and highlight that to the administration is really part of that survivability, in making sure that college radio continues to be this vibrant medium. And I think it's true across all of non-commercial radio as well. But in college radio, I think it just becomes so highlighted because of the educational mission of the institutions to which they're attached.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sometimes it's stuff that we all sort of know intuitively. So a lot of it is really just making this stuff, or making it explicit. So we know all these things. We know how valuable college radio is and how it has helped many of us with our future careers. But just writing that out is helpful, just, you know, so you have something that you can take to administrators, so you can show to students. We constantly need to be sort of reminding people why we're important. You know, just because we know it in our heads doesn't mean other people automatically know that. So being very explicit about it, I think, is helpful for all stations.
I think that brings us full circle, right? So the day started with that question, why radio? And I don't know that it was apparent to me at the time, but I'm seeing how if every student in that room and everybody who had a community station walked away thinking about that question and having their own elevator pitch ready, then some great work was done, because part of the reason that stations sometimes suffer, regardless of what type of station it is because to some extent they get taken for granted, and often by the volunteers, by the listeners, by administration. And reviewing this question in our minds and thinking about it and preparing the answer, I think, is a step towards us not taking it for granted as volunteers and listeners and whatever, and helps us make that case. So I think it was great. I'm really looking forward and hoping to hear back from other stops on this tour. And I know that you're going to go to another college radio event very soon here, right?
Yeah, in exactly a week, I'm going to the University of California Radio Network Conference, UCRN. And a number of University of California schools hold, or the University of California system holds radio licenses for college radio stations at a number of the campuses. So they regularly communicate, since they have, since the system holds right. So many licenses. So twice a year they have conferences at different college radio stations in California. And it's expanded a bit. So in addition to University of California schools, KSPC at Pomona College is also a member. But what's really nice is now they're starting to invite local stations from the area where the conference is being held. So it's not just limited to UC schools. And so, yeah, it's going to be at KSPC at Pomona College next week. I'm going to talk on a panel about college radio history, along with Sandra Wasson from CalX at the University of California, Berkeley Station.
Which is K-A-L-X.
Yes, K-A-L-X in Berkeley. And so we'll talk about college radio history. And then, you know, there will be other panels and meetups. And it should be great. It's what's nice. I really love these regional conferences, especially for those of us on the West Coast. I think I'd like to point out that a lot of conferences happen on the East Coast, a lot of college radio conferences like CMJ and traditionally CBI has had their college radio conferences more in the eastern part of the country. and they came to Seattle last year for the first time. So it's really nice that CMJ came out to the West Coast. And it's nice for California that there's the UC Radio Network conference, because often we can't afford to go all the way across the country for a conference. So it's a great opportunity to meet people from other stations and, you know, talk about projects, talk about shared concerns. So I'll report back on that as well.
And people can always read your report backs and much of your coverage of college radio at radiosurvivor.com, and just click on the college radio menu right at the top. And any notes related to what we talked about here will be in our show notes, radiosurvivor.com/podcast. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thanks.
That wraps up another episode of Radio Survivor. Thank you so much for taking some time to spend with us this week.
Right. Radio Survivor is a blog where Matthew Lassar and Jennifer Waits are major contributors, and Radio Survivor is a podcast where Paul and I are the main producers of the content.
Yeah, go to radiosurvivor.com. We do update every single weekday with recurring features like our LPFM watch, which keeps an eye on low power FM, Jennifer's weekly college radio watch, and of course we keep an eye on a radio of all kinds every single day. We hope you'll participate on our new forums, radiosurvivor.com/forum.
You are invited.
You are invited, and it's our non-commercialized space to help connect up and create this new corpus of best practices all around radio. Ask a question, answer a question, share something you love.
If you're a brand new participant on the forums, Paul, can you just ask a random question about radio or podcasts?
Yes. And we hope other people will answer. There are no stupid questions.
At the very least, you will have the Radio Survivor bloggers answering your question. And at the best case scenario, other people will be joining in too.
So please join in radiosurvivor.com/forum and do help us to finance this operation that seems to grow by the week. Here, we could really use your help. Go to radiosurvivor.com/support. We have ways to make one-time donations online very easily, or you could sign up to make a recurring donation that really helps out via our Patreon campaign. That's radiosurvivor.com/support.
Paul is joking that it grows by the week, but it's true. I can't wait to found 7 more podcasts all under the Radio Survivor banner.
Thanks a lot. And of course, if you want to send us a more private communique, send it to podcast@radiosurvivor.com. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks, everyone, for listening.